Okay. Okay, Shalom Aleichem. So tonight, Mitzvah Hashem, we're going to be finishing up the principle of Mekalkel. We're going to discuss some interesting shilohs at the end of today's shiur. And then we'll be off for 2 weeks for Thanksgiving for Hanukkah. And then, Mitzvah Hashem, after that, we will continue with the next principle, which will be the principle of Shinoi. Fine. So last week, we kicked off the principle of Mekalkel. We saw that we have this rule that the malachos need to be done in a productive manner. If they're done in a destructive manner, so then you're going to be subject to a ptur. And, we call it tikkun and kilkul. The malachos need to be done for the sake of a tikkun, a productive effect. If they're done in a destructive manner for kilkul, so then it's going to be patur. The classic case that comes up is in the Gemara in Kuf Hei Amud Beis. So the Gemara tells us that if a person gets very angry on Shabbos, and he's so angry that he tears something up, he rips something to shreds in anger, so he's going to be patur. Now, why is he patur? When he rips something on Shabbos, he's doing the act of Malachas Koraya. He's ripping something up. Why is he patur? So Rav Rishonim understand that this is going to be Mekalkel, that this is a wanton act of destruction. There's no nothing productive coming about in this act of ripping, and therefore he's going to be patur. So that's the basic principle of Mekalkel. Now, tonight, to round out the sugya, we're going to be discussing one of the major qualifications to the principle of Mekalkel, which is going to be a circumstance where we may not be makbid on productivity, where you may even be chayav for doing a malacha in a destructive manner. So that's the agenda for tonight. Before we continue, I just want to point out that tonight's chavura is sponsored anonymously or by fine. For the sake for Refuah Shleima for Yaakov Burek and Anshel's mother, and also Zeicher Nishmas Yehudis Bas Yitzchak. Okay. Shkayach, thank you very much for supporting us. Okay, so to analyze tonight's sugya, we're going to move over to the Gemara on Kavav Amud Aleph, and we're going to develop some principles, and then in the second part of tonight's share, we'll see how they play out in some contemporary shilohs that came up in the postgame. Okay, so the Gemara here in Kofav is discussing two malachas, which we discussed last week, the malacha of Chabura and the malacha of Ma'avir. Chabura is where you cause a wound on Shabbos, where you draw some blood on Shabbos. That's the malacha of Chabura. Most Rishonim understand that it fits under Netilas Neshama, that one of our 39 malachos is Shochet / Netilas Neshama. If you shech a living being, if you take the life of a living being, that's one of our malachos. When you cause a wound and you draw blood, you're taking away some of the life force of an organism that's going to be subject to Netilas Neshama. The second malacha that comes up in this Gemara is the malacha of Ma'avir, which, as we know, is the malacha of lighting a fire. Now, the big issue that comes up in this Gemara is to understand how does the principle of Mekalkel play out when it comes to these two malachos? Because there seems to be a little bit of a logical contradiction almost. On the one hand, we're saying that all of our malachas need to be productive. They can't be destructive. But these two malachos of Chabura and Ma'avir are typically speaking destructive. When you cause a wound on Shabbos, the natural act of causing a wound is a destructive activity. When you light a fire on Shabbos, you're consuming something, you're destroying something, that's naturally destructive. And so the question is, how does the principle of Mekalkel play out pertaining to these two malachos? So that's the goal for tonight, which we're going to be analyzing the first part of tonight's shiur before we get to the poskim. Fine. Now, last week we touched upon this sugya a little bit with Rashi and the Ramban, and tonight we're going to focus in on the shita of Tosfos. Tosfos is going to have some key insights into the sugya, which is going to be very important for the halacha l'maaseh. Fine. So Tosfos understands that there are actually a few different opinions in this piece of Gemara on the issue of Mekalkel when it comes to these two malachos. We're going to focus on two mainstream approaches in this piece of Gemara and analyze the repercussions of these two approaches. It comes out of the Gemara, according to Tosfos, we have a basic machlokes between Rabbi Shimon, as understood by Rabbi Abahu, versus Rabbi Yehuda, on this issue of Mekalkel by these two malachos. So starting with the shita of Rabbi Shimon, as understood by Rabbi Abahu, maintains that by these two malachos of Chabura and Ma'avir, we waive the requirements for productivity. Although by the rest of the Lam Tes malachos, it needs to be done for the sake of tikkun. But by these two malachas, if you wound someone or if you light a fire, we waive the need for productivity. Even if it's totally destructive, you're going to be chayev. This is what's known as the shita of mekalkel b'chabur of havara chayev. So that is shita number one, the shita of Rabbi Shimon. The second shita in this Gemara is the shita of Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Yehuda maintains that we do not waive the requirement for productivity. Just like all the other malachos need to be done for a productive purpose, so too these malachos need to be done for a productive purpose. If you do it for destructive purposes, it will be pater. And so Rabbi Yehuda maintains, mekalkel b'chabur avavara, pater. So those are our two shitos in this Gemara, Rabbi Shimon versus Rabbi Yehuda. Do we need productivity by the malachas of chabura and havara? Now we're going to spend some time now analyzing the point of contention between these two shitos. Tosas points out, he explains that the continuation of the Gemara is giving us what we can call a derivational hezber in this machlokas, that they're arguing over how to make a certain derivation, and that's going to flow into their different opinions on this issue. So let's analyze the derivational machlokas between Rabbi Shimon versus Rabbi Yehuda. The Gemara in the continuation on Kofav and Manalf brings two drashos. So let's spell out the drashos and then we'll go through the machlokas. The first drasha pertains to the malach of chabura. The Gemara brings a special drasha which teaches us that if you perform a bris milah on Shabbos, in principle, that would be aser mida araisa. When you perform a bris milah on Shabbos, you're causing a wound, you're drawing blood from the baby. And so in principle, that would be a malacha deraisa. Now we're used to the fact if the eighth day falls out on Shabbos, we go ahead with the bris. And that's because there's a special heter, there's a special permit that a bris on the right time is going to override the Shabbos. But if not for that special heter, there's a special drash in the Gemara that in principle, performing a bris milah on Shabbos is aser because it's a bona fide act of malachas chavala. So that is drasha number one. The second drasha that comes up in this Gemara is the following din. The halacha is that if a married lady commits znus, so she's subject to the misa of strangulation. Don't tell this to the Democrats that we believe in a capital punishment, but if the married lady commits znus, so she is subject to the death penalty of chenek. But there's a special halacha that if the lady who commits znus is a bas kohen, she's the daughter of a kohen, so then she gets killed through sreifa, through the misa of sreifa. In not this week's parsha, but next week's parsha, so with the incident with Yehuda and Tamar, when Tamar is suspected of having committed snus, they want to throw her into the kivshana ish. Why was she going to be killed through burning? Because she was a bas kohen, her father was Shem, who's called the kohen lekel elyon. And so Tamar being a bas kohen, the misa that she was subjected to was the misa of sreifa. That's the special punishment that is inflicted upon a bas kohen who is mezana. Now the Gemara has a special drasha to teach us that if you would carry out this death penalty on Shabbos, you're going to violate the malacha of ma'avir. Because the way we carry out the misa of sreifa is we burn up some lead, we make molten lead, and we pour it down the lady's throat, and there's no bracha achron on that, you know? So that's the misa of sreifa. And so when you prepare the lead and you're burning the lead, you're doing the malacha of ma'avir, that is going to be a malacha deraisa. So these are the two drashos in this Gemara. We have one drasha teaching us that performing a bris milah on Shabbos is the malach of chavala, you're causing a wound in the baby. And the second drasha is teaching us that if you burn the bas kohen on Shabbos, you're going to violate the malach of ma'avir. And this is now where we're going to have a machlokes between Rabbi Yehuda versus Rabbi Shimon, how to understand the significance of these two drashas. So starting with the shita of Rabbi Shimon. Rabbi Shimon understands that these two malachos, a bris milah and burning the bas kohen, both of them are destructive activities. Because when you perform a bris milah, so you're wounding the baby, you're drawing blood from the baby, it's a destructive activity. When you prepare the fire to destroy this lady, once again, you're doing a destructive activity. These are both acts of mekalkel. So Reb Shimon was bothered, if these are destructive activities, how are they malachos? How are you chayiv in principle for doing a bris milah? How are you chayiv for carrying out the havaras bas kohen? These are destructive malachos. So Rabbi Shimon concluded that we must conclude that we waive the requirements for productivity. That although, yes, generally speaking, the malacha has to have a tikkun in it and needs to be productive, but by these two malachos, we don't need productivity. So though a bris milah is destructive, although destroying this lady is destructive, it doesn't matter in principle, they're bona fide malachos, because we waive the need for tikkun pertaining to chavala and havar. So that is the shita of Rabbi Shimon on a derivational level, where his shita is coming from. Yeah, Daniel.
Just to confirm, you're saying the waiver for productivity is in these specific contexts, or for havara and
a bris mila is a chavala, is the malach of chavala, and the fact that bris mila is chayv deraisa must be because even though it's destructive, we don't care about productivity. Mm-hmm. Chavala is chayv even when it's destructive. When I burn the bas
kalma, not in general.
Yeah.
Not in general, just in these contexts.
In these contexts, it's destructive. So It's a drasha which teaches us that we therefore always waive productivity, that you never need productivity. If you have it, gevaldik, but even if you don't, you'll be chayiv nonetheless.
Okay, fine. So that's what I'm asking. So you're saying if someone is outside of the context of Mila does Mavir in a destructive way.
Yeah, exactly. Fine. Exactly. 100%.
Okay. So then the question then follows, what makes Havara and Chabura unique, right?
That is a very good question. It's a 30-minute shiur. We have 30 minutes left, so I want to get to the halacha maisa.
Okay.
Mayor, is that a thumbs up or a question? Oh, thumbs up. Thank you. I appreciate that. Okay. Now, the person giving the shiur also needs chizik sometimes. Okay. Fine. Thanks. Okay. Fine. Moving over to the shita of Rabbi Yehuda. So Rabbi Yehuda says that really these are productive activities. When you perform a bris mila, when you burn the bas kohen, these are productive activities, because although they look destructive, you're wounding the tinok, you're killing this lady, but you're performing a mitzvah. You're accomplishing a kiyama mitzvah. Bris mila is a mitzvah, and carrying out the judicial system is a mitzvah. And so although it looks destructive, it's performing a mitzvah, therefore it's considered to be a tikkun. So we don't see anywhere in these drashos, the halacha, that we waive the requirement for productivity by these malachos. These are chabura and havara, in these cases, are productive. They have tikkun, and you always need productivity. So that is the shita of Rabbi Yehuda, that these are productive, and we see no reason to waive the need for productivity. So that's the derivational machlokas, the starting point, the machlokas of Rabbi Yehuda versus Rabbi Shimon. It revolves around how to understand the drasha of bris mila and havaras bas kohen. Are these called destructive? Are they considered to be productive? According to Rabbi Shimon, these are destructive, because we don't care about the fact that it's being done for the sake of a mitzvah. Lamaisa, you're wounding the baby, you're burning this lady. Whereas Rabbi Yehuda maintains that they're considered to be productive because you're accomplishing a mitzvah. Performing a mitzvah is considered to be a tikkun. Now, just to finish off part one of today's chabura, we're going to just do a little bit of a conceptual analysis of this shaila. We're having a shaila now as to if doing an act that's destructive for the sake of a mitzvah, is that considered to be productive? Is that considered to be destructive? Rabbi Shimon is holding that bris mila, let's say, is destructive. We don't care if it's done for the sake of a mitzvah. Whereas Rabbi Yehuda maintains that the fact that it's done for a mitzvah makes it considered to be a tikkun. And the question is, what's the hesber in that machlokes? What's the conceptual basis for the shita of Rabbi Shimon? What's the conceptual basis for the shita of Rabbi Yehuda? Anyone want to give it a shot here? Yeah. So Mordechai happens to be posing a beautiful chakira that the post can bring up pertaining to Malachas Mavir. So it's a very good chakira, but I want to stay more local to the mitzvah aspect. That's shmak. So Rabbi Yehuda maintains you're doing a mitzvah, and that makes it productive. So what's Rabbi Shimon hold?
It's the actual action that you're doing is what defines whether it's productive or destructive. Whereas Yehuda is going to hold maybe that it's the intent behind it. So if you're doing it for the sake of a mitzvah, that makes it productive.
Okay. So Yona is saying something interesting, which touches on what we did last week. I just don't want, for the sake of the Zoom guys, I don't want to overdo it. Maybe I'll just go on by a little bit. Fine. So. So I just want to share the way Rapparnas once analyzed this machlokes. I'm going to change the terminology just a little bit, but it's the same basic methodology. Rapparnas pointed out that this is going to come down to a basic chakira as to how to understand what do we mean when you say you need tikkun, you need productivity. In what way does a malacha need to be productive in order to satisfy this new qualification of tikkun, in order to not be considered to be mikalkin? So Rapanis pointed out there are two basic approaches that could be taken. One way of defining tikkun is to say that a malacha has to be beneficial. When you do a malacha, there needs to be some benefit that you're gaining out of the performance of the malacha, some to'elis that you're achieving that makes it productive. If you have no benefit at all, so then we call it destructive. But as long as there's some benefit in the malacha, that's considered to be productive. That's Tzad Aleph in Arech HaKira. A second approach that could be taken is to say that we need more than just any stam benefit. When we say malacha has to be a tikkun, you can't just have any benefit. It needs to be creative. You need to be creating something. You need to be producing something. When we say the malacha, that the essence of the malacha is they're productive. They're all producing something. They're all making something. Maybe that's what we mean when we say tikkun, that it needs to be making something or producing something. So we're posing a basic hakira. What do we mean when we say the malachos have to have tikkun and it can't be mekalkel? Do we mean to say that the malachos need to have a benefit, some to'elus, in order to be considered to be productive? Or do we mean more than that, that the malachos have to create something, they need to be making something? So let's just plug that hakira into this discussion. But we have a shaila, if I do a brisk meal, let's say, is that considered to be productive because I'm accomplishing a mitzvah? Or is that destructive because I'm wounding the baby? So let's go to the two tzadim in this hakira. If you go with the first tzad in the hakira, that we define tikkun by benefit, that anytime you do a malacha for a beneficial purpose, that's called productive. So in this situation, when you do a bris milah on Shabbos, I think we would all agree that that's beneficial. Although you're wounding the baby, and the baby right now might not think it's so beneficial, but in the long run, he's not chayiv kares, it's good for him, it's very beneficial. And so I think we would all agree when you do a malacha for the sake of a mitzvah, that's considered to be beneficial, even though in the real world you're doing some destructive act, but accomplishing a mitzvah is a benefit, there's some to'elis, and therefore that would be considered to be a tikkun. So that's the lumnus behind the shita of Rabbi Huda. Rabbi Huda maintains that doing a malacha that looks destructive, if it's mekayim a mitzvah, it's called a tikkun. He holds that as long as there's some benefit when you do a malacha, that's considered to be productive, and a mitzvah is a beneficial purpose. Moving over to the second side in the Chakira, if we say that we need more than just a benefit, we need to be making something, we need to be creating something, so now we have a different perspective. Because when you do a bris milah, let's say, on Shabbos, so although it's true you're accomplishing a mitzvah, but you're not actually creating something, you're not actually making something. Now, if you want to be very firm, you'll say that in the upper worlds, you're creating malachim, you're creating advocates on your behalf, and of course, that's absolutely true. And maybe the Mashgiach will talk about tomorrow during the Shmooze. But when we're learning Gemara Seder, so we talk about the mundane world. And down here, there's nothing being created. There's no production taking place when you perform a bris milah. It's a destructive activity. The fact that you're accomplishing a mitzvah is not creating something. You're not making something. And therefore, that would be considered to be destructive. So that's the lumnus for the shita of Rabbi Shimon. He holds that the fact that you did a mitzvah doesn't make it productive because the malacha has to be having some creative effect, some concrete production. And a mitzvah is not called producing something. You're not making something. It's very good. We'll praise you. Maybe we'll give you shlishi, but you're not making something. And so therefore, it's not going to be considered to be productive. So that's the hesber that our partners once gave for this machlokas. And with that, we've concluded part one of today's shir. So let's just summarize, then we'll stop for questions for a moment, and then we'll move over to the shaylos and the postgame. So just to sum up, we're discussing how does the principle of mekalkel play out by the malachas of chabura and havara? They're naturally destructive. Do we maintain the principle of mekalkel or not? The machlokas Rabbi Shimon versus Rabbi Huda. Rabbi Shimon says we waive the need for productivity. Even if it's totally destructive, you're going to be chayiv. Rabbi Huda says we don't waive the need for productivity. If it's not going to be productive, you're going to be pater. And on a derivational level, the question is how to understand the drashas of bris milah and havaris bas kohen. Are these called destructive activities, in which case we must conclude that we waive the need for productivity? Or are these productive activities, in which case they're consistent with the general principles of Hilcha Shabbos, and we see no reason to waive the need for tikkun? And we pointed out on a conceptual level, as Parnas pointed out, they're arguing over how to understand what do we mean by tikkun. On the one hand, when you do a mitzvah, there's some benefit that you're accruing, but you're not really making something, you're not really producing something. Yeah.
Two questions. First of all, assuming why is it not like this one? It's very productive. You're cooking the lead, making it to liquid.
Eitan is asking, when I cook the lead, Why is that violating malachas bishul? So okay, so it happens to be that okay. He's asking a good question. If you cook the lead to burn this lady, maybe there should also be malachas bishul involved. Maybe yes, maybe no. Okay, so Eitan happens to be holding a lot. I don't think that's a kasha on what we're saying though. He's pointing out that there seem to be more malachas involved in bris milah and havaris bas kohen when you form a bris milah. Maybe there should be a makom b'patish. He's pointing out, and maybe bishul when you cook the psila. So these are good points.
But it's not.
They might be. It's a very complicated point.
Okay, and so you know, why can't you say that somehow making the mitzvah, but it's also just doing your intent. That's productive in
and of
itself.
Okay, so Eitan is actually what Yonah said before. Eitan is suggesting that when I do a malacha for the sake of a mitzvah, since my purpose is to do the mitzvah, maybe that should define it as being productive. And maybe the fact that I'm intending to do it for a mitzvah should define it as being productive.
The lead should be productive, and it should be producing something.
Okay. So, okay, I feel guilty. It's a very long piece of Gemara here. Tosis asks your question. So Eitan just asked the kasha of the bottom Tosis Kufal and Alf. I just can't get into it, but it's an excellent, excellent question. Daniel, do you have a question?
Well, I guess just bothered by the terminology that's being used with regards to a malacha having a productive quality. Not all malachos have either perceptible productive qualities. Like, let's say by Zriya, right? If I put a seed in the ground, right? What productive? What has been produced there?
I'm producing a plant. I'm having a certain physical concrete production.
I mean, most of the malachos have a benefit that accrues to the individual. That's what makes it creative, but it doesn't necessarily have to result in something that's productive now, right? Even in these cases, right? Maybe we can consider that it's a non-productive entity and it's still be malacha, right? So it just seems to be a little bit of a
Daniel's questioning. If I'm correct, Daniel's asking, we're saying that according to our second side, they need a creative effect in a malacha. Is that really true by all Lama Test Malachos? He's asking from, let's say, Zariah, is there really a creative effect? Are you creating something? Is that the question you're asking?
Yeah, I mean, I think that it's...
I think it's a very fair question. It definitely has to be tested. On a basic level, we'd say by Zariah, you're producing a plant. You're doing a process of producing a plant, which we can call creating something. You're producing something. You're making something. By all the Mishnah, you know, by Bishul, I'm creating a Chefs of Ochel. I'm producing something. I'm making something. By all the Malachos, we could probably frame it in this way, but I guess we can discuss afterwards. Very good har, though.
I also am holding in Yonah's camp. I think Yonah's analysis is good.
Okay, fair enough.
Yeah.
Fine. Okay, so let's move over now to part two of tonight's... Yeah, I just want to... You want to... Might I just... We want to... Yeah, okay. Okay. Okay, but it's a low sase. It's more complicated. There's no key in there. Yeah, okay, fine. So let's move over now to part two. We're discussing shilas in the poskim, so how they're connected to tonight's discussion. Fine. So the first shila comes up is as follows. The poskim want to know, what's the halacha when it comes in terms of putting in an IV on Shabbos into a chola she'en bo sakana? If you have a chola she'esh bo sakana, so if you have a sick person whose life is on the line, so obviously you just do whatever it takes and it's a mitzvah to do. But the question becomes, let's say you have a sick person whose life is not on the line, his life is not in danger. And it would be very helpful to this person to help him heal if he could put in an IV on Shabbos. So what's the halachic perspective of putting in an IV on Shabbos in a chola she'esh bo sakana? That's the question that comes up in the poskim. So we have on this a machlokes between the Shmir Shabbos Kehilchasa on the one hand versus the Or Letzion, Rav Avadya, and the Tzitz Eliezer on the other hand. So let's go through the two approaches in the poskim. Starting with the Shmir Shabbos Kehilchasa. So the Shmir Shabbos Kehilchasa says like this, that when you put in an IV, so the etzem fact that you're puncturing a hole in the person is technically not a problem at all. The fact that you're making a hole is not considered to be a problem. But what is a problem is as follows, that when you put in the IV, so typically the nurse or the doctor who's doing it needs to draw out a little bit of blood to make sure that they hit the vein. You don't want it to be in an artery or in a tissue. You want to make sure you got it into the vein. And so they draw out a little bit of blood to make sure that they got to the right spot. And when you draw out some blood, you're doing the malacha of chabura. You're causing more than a wound. You're drawing out some blood. That's a malacha of chabura. Maybe that should be prohibited. So the Shmir Shabbos says that it is prohibited. It's going to be aser mida araisa, that putting an IV is aser mida araisa because you're drawing out a little bit of blood, and therefore it's only permissible for chola shiyesh bo sakana. If you have a chola whose life is on the line, so then obviously it'll be permissible. But if you have a chola she'ein bo sakana, he's not actually, his life is not on the line, it's just that he's very helpful, so we would not permit that on Shabbos. That is the psak of the Shmir Shabbos Kilchasa. And the Shmir Shabbos brings Rabbi Chaskel Abramsky, who also held this way, that putting an IV is also midiraisa, and it would only be mutter for chola she'esh bo sakana. Moving over to the second school of thought, so we begin with the Or Lezion. The Or Lezion was written by Rav Ben Zion Abba Shaul. He was a contemporary of Rav Avadia Yosef. The Ashkenazim are not going to know this, that's why I have to give them background. Rav Yashiv said that Rav Ben Zion was the Gadol Dor for the Sfardim. I don't think it was Lafuki Rav Avadia, but it just helps you appreciate where who Rav Ben Zion Abba Shaul was. So the Or Lezion says that we can come up with two arguments, two mitigating factors in this situation, which can help us build up a case to say that it would be permissible to put in an IV in a chola she'ein bo sakana. The first argument that Rav Ben Zion makes is as follows. He says that we can implement our first heter of malacha she'ein tzrich legufa. We know that the malachas need to be done for a specific purpose in order to be chayiv. If you don't do them for the right purpose, you're going to be pater. That's the principle of malacha she'ein tzrich legufa. That's what we did for the first 3 weeks of the season here after our kickoff shir. And says Rav Ben Zion, he wants to make an argument that when you put in the IV and you draw out some blood, that is a malacha she'ein tzrich legufa, because you're not trying to attain the blood. You're not drawing it out to be mishtamish with the blood. All you're trying to do is make sure that you hit the right spot. If you could have a sophisticated x-ray machine that told you that you hit the vein, you'd be perfectly satisfied. You don't actually want the blood fundamentally. You're not using it. So therefore, it should be considered to be a malacha she'ein tzrich legufa. So that is mitigating factor number one. The second mitigating factor that he brings up, he says, is that we'll use tonight's heter of mikalkel. That once again, the same analysis here, when you draw out the blood, you're not drawing out the blood to use the blood. You're going to discard the blood. There's no benefit that's being accomplished in the performance of this malacha. When you draw out the blood, it's destructive. You're going to discard the blood. Let's call that mikalkel. Now, the second heter is complicated because we're discussing the malacha of chavala. Does the heter of mikalkel apply to chavala? If you do the malacha of chabura in destructive manner, is that subject to the heter of chavala? So Rav Ben Zion knows that it's a machlokes in our Gemara. We had a machlokes tonight, Tuna B'Shimon versus Rabbi Huda, on mekalkel b'chabura. Are you going to be chayiv or are you potter if you do the malacha of chavala in a destructive manner? Is a machlokes Rabbi Shimon versus Rabbi Yehuda? Says Rabbi Zion, the Rambam paskins that you need productivity. Paskins that the malacha of chabura needs to be done for productive purposes. If you don't do it for productive purposes, you're going to be potter. And so that would be a second sad to be mekel. So he says that we have two mitigating factors in this situation. First of all, it's a malacha she'ein tzrich legufa because you don't really want the blood. You're just trying to make sure you got the right spot. And second of all, it's a destructive activity because you don't really want the blood. You just want to make sure you got the right spot. And therefore, in conjunction, we're going to consider this to be a trade there abundant for the sake of a chol she'im basakana, and therefore there's room to be makel. So that was the psak of the Or Lezion. Now, Rav Avadia, so he has a very interesting piece in Yavia Omer. It's tremendously long. It'll take probably a few weeks to go through it, if not. And this whole entire piece in Yavia Omer is dedicated to commenting on the Or Lezion. That's the entire, as I said, they were contemporaries. And he spent an entire siman, an entire tshuva in Yavia Omer, going through all the different pieces in Or Lezion and commenting. And on this particular piece of the Or Lezion, the heter to put in IV, so all Rav Avadia does is a one-liner, where he says, he's right. He's right that it's mutter to put in the IV for Embo Sakana, as the Tzitz Eliezer points out. So he's pointing out also that Tzeliezer as well, for us Ashkenazim, if you want an Ashkenazi posik that was Mekel, that Tzeliezer was also Mekel on this issue, because he was big into the Malacha Shentrich Lagufa argument, that you're not doing it for the purpose of using the blood, you're just trying to find the right spot. And so therefore, the Tzeliezer, Rav Avadia, and the Oral Tzion were all Mekel on this Shaila. So this is all our first application of the issue of Mekalkel B'chabur. We're pointing out the issue of using an IV on Shabbos touches on tonight's discussion. The Shmir Shabbos was machmer on the issue. He held that it was Aser Midaraisa and Rav Abramsky as well. Whereas the Oral Tzion, Rav Avadia, and Tzeliezer are Mekel. And the Oral Tzion is having two arguments that it should be in Tzrich L'Gufa, that it should be considered to be Mekalkel. Yeah, Scott.
How are you? Isn't every Mekalkel necessarily Malacha Shein Tzrich L'Gufa?
Okay, that is a...
How could you combine them as two separate things? It should, Malacha Shein Tzrich L'Gufa should fall under Mekalkel.
Okay, so Scott happens to be asking a very, very, very deep question. He's asking, shouldn't every Mekalkel be Ein Tzrich L'Gufa? Generally speaking, if I do a Malacha for a destructive purpose, it's probably not going to be done for the right purpose. So Scott happens to be 100% on the ball. This is a big discussion in the Mefarshim to distinguish between these two principles. Every time I do something for a destructive purpose, I'm probably not going to have the right purpose for Tzrich L'Gufa. If you look at Tosas and Kufav and Aleph, he raises this very issue in our very Sugya. And other Mefarshim as well try to figure out how to distinguish between two principles. But the bottom line is that they do distinguish, but it's a phenomenal, phenomenal Ha'ara. Okay, Daniel.
Yeah, it was.
Did I mess up any of the signs here?
No, you got it perfect.
You're okay, fine.
The discussion here is about IVs and aspirating blood, but what about blood draws for lab testing? Is that
okay? I was just going to get there. Okay, fine. So, any last question before I get to Daniel's point? Okay, fine. So, the Oral Tzion points out that although he's Mekel on putting in an IV, he's Machmir on taking a blood test, because if you take a blood test on Shabbos, so then you are trying to attain the blood. You're trying to use the blood to test the blood. That would be aser midarais. That would be chavala for the right purpose. For productive purposes, you're drawing the blood to be mishtamish with the blood. That would be aser midarais. So in the very next shuva, the Oral Tzion says that a blood test would only be mutter for a chola sheyesh bo sakana. Only if his life is on the line would we permit a blood test. We would not permit a blood test for a chola she'en bo sakana. So this is all application number one of tonight's discussion. A very interesting issue about putting an IV on Shabbos. Okay, now let's come over to application number two. Yeah.
Are you actually using the blood
by a blood test? Okay, so Eitan's asked when I test the blood, is that called using the blood? Okay, so that's is that really called using it for productive purposes? Okay, so it's an interesting ha'ara. It's an interesting ha'ara. So Rabin Tzion says also the Reisa. Eitan is Sephardi, so that was enough for him. Okay, yeah. Yeah, okay, fine. Fine. Moving over to application number two. Okay. Our second application gets into the dental shiloh that I alluded to last week. Around to a number of interesting dental shilohs, which we'll hopefully cover in the future. But for now, we'll just discuss one interesting shiloh that comes up in the postgame. It begins with the Ramah in Simen Shinchav Chesif Gimel. The Ramah brings up the following situation. Let's say you have a person on Shabbos who has a toothache. And the way to help relieve this fellow of his pain is to pull the tooth. Is it permissible to pull a tooth on Shabbos? So the Ramah says that you can go to a goy and the goy can pull the tooth on Shabbos. It is permissible. So that is the heter of the Ramah, that is mutter to have a goy pull a tooth on Shabbos. Now, we have a machlokes haposkim as to how to understand how far does this heter of the Ramah go. When the Ramah says that you can pull a tooth on Shabbos, what was the circumstance he's discussing? So we have in this machlokes between the Magen Avraham versus the Be'er Halacha, two approaches how to understand when do we permit you to pull a tooth on Shabbos. Starting with the Magen Avraham. The Magen Avraham says that the Ramah is only discussing a situation where the toothache spreads to the whole body and the person is in pain all over due to the tooth. He's ill all over because of the painful tooth. That would be the only situation where a goy can pull the tooth. But if it's not that bad, it would be prohibited. Why is the Magen Avraham, why is he so machmir? Says the Magen Avraham, because this is aser midaraisa. When you pull a tooth on Shabbos, you're doing a malacha deraisa. What's the malacha? the malacha of chabura, because when you pull the tooth, you're going to be pulling blood as well. You're drawing out blood as well for medicinal purposes. And so therefore, you're doing the malacha of chavala, being done for productive purposes. And so therefore, it is asr midaraisa. Since we're talking about an isr deraisa, says the Magen Avraham, it's only mutter if the whole entire body is in pain. But if it's not in pain all over, that is not going to be permissible, even with a guy. That is the shita of the Magen Avraham. Yeah, dope. Okay, so Dov is asking a question. I tried to pull a fast one here. It doesn't usually work. Dov is asking, what is the halacha category of a cholo whose body is in pain all over? Like, let's use regular terminology. Like, what are we discussing here? I tried being vague. It's a little bit complicated. There are two possibilities. Either the Magen Avraham means a cholo sheyesh bo sakana, that when you're in pain all over, so that's representative of already being your life is on the line. That's option number one. Option number two is that he's talking about a very severe chol she'en bo sakana. That he means to say that if it's a very severe chol she'en bo sakana, so therefore there as well will permit the pulling of the tooth by the goy. So that's a very good question. But whatever the case may be, the symptom that would permit you to have the tooth pulled according to Magen Avraham is if the person is in pain all over. Otherwise, it would be prohibited. I believe from our dental crew here that this is not so typical, that a person's pain all over. Yeah, they're agreeing with us. We have a few dentists on the scene, getting some nods here. Okay. Yeah. Bottom line is use Crest or Colgate. Yeah. Okay, fine. Yeah.
Pain all over means like...
You're a person's... No.
Fatigue, you're like, you don't feel well.
A person who's... He feels ill all over, right? To what degree you're saying... We're actually going to get there, hopefully, in future seconds. Fine. Okay. Moving over to the Bir Halacha. So the Bir Halacha questions the Magen Avraham. He says that it's not so pashut that pulling a tooth on Shabbos is going to be asr mid araisa. Because when you pull the tooth on Shabbos, what's your kavana? What's your intention when you're pulling the tooth? Your kavana is to pull the tooth. Your kavana is not to get the blood out. That's not your kavana. Now, it's true, it's what we call psik resha. It's inevitable that when you pull a tooth, blood is going to come out. But it's a psik resha. He doesn't care whether the blood comes out, whether the blood doesn't come out. This is a psik resha. And therefore, says the Bir Halacha, something very sophisticated. He says like this. As to the halacha, when you pull a tooth on Shabbos, in light of the fact that it's a psik resha, it's going to depend on our machlokas tonight between Rabbi Yehuda versus Rabbi Shimon. So you got a whole cup in this cheshbon. He makes the following cheshbon. He says that pulling a tooth and doing a psik resha, the lech basleh, where again, I'm focused on getting the tooth out, and inevitably blood's going to come out, but I don't care about that. I'm not really intending for that. As if this is deraisa or derabanan, is going to depend on Rabbi Shimon versus Rabbi Huda. So starting with the shita of Rabbi Shimon, the Bir Halacha says like this. He says that according to Rabbi Shimon says that we waive the need for productivity by this malacha, that we don't care about the need for tikkun, we waive the need for productivity. Says the Bir Halacha, just like Rabbi Shimon's going to waive the need for productivity, he's also going to waive the need for kavana. That although typically, if I do a psik resha to lo ichbasle, I'm focused on doing activity A, and inevitably it's going to cause activity B, which is asr deraisa, which would have been asr. Although typically on Shabbos, it's not asr deraisa. On Shabbos, a psik resha lo ichbasle is only asr derabanan. But in this situation, it's been asr deraisa. According to Rabbi Shimon, just like we're machmir in terms of productivity, that we don't care if it's productive, it's asr deraisa nonetheless. We waive the need for tikkun. It's always asr deraisa. So too, we waive the need for kavana, that we don't care if your kavana is off. We don't care if your kavana is just to get the tooth out and your kavana is not to get the blood out. It's still going to be asr midaraisa. Why should they go hand in hand, as Ben is asking me with his eyebrows being raised? Because they're both coming from Malachas Machshavas. Malachas Machshavas is the reason why your putter, for the general reason why you need tikkun. Malachas Machshavas is the general reason why you need kavana. And so just like Rabbi Shimon waves Malachas Machshavas, I just got to finish up. He waves Malachas Machshavas by the need for tikkun. He's going to wave Malachas Machshavas by the need for kavana. And therefore it's asr midarais. So the Bir Halacha says that I'll submit to you, the Magen Avraham, that according to Rabbi Shimon, this is going to be asr midaraisa. However, says the Bir Halacha, according to Rabbi Huda, this is going to be asr midarabanan. That when you pull a tooth on Shabbos, it's going to be asr midarabanan. Because Rabbi Yehuda treats the malacha of chabura no different than any of the other malachas. Again, we're discussing the malacha of chabura. We're not discussing any stam malacha. We're talking about drawing blood. But according to Rabbi Yehuda, chabura is no different than any other malacha. We subject it to all the regular regulations. And so just like it needs tikkun, chabura is also going to need the general need for kavana. You need to have kavana to do the malacha. If my kavana is to pull the tooth out and my kavana is not to get the blood out, even though it's inevitable, since I don't want that secondary effect, I don't really care if the blood comes out or not, so this is going to be asr midirabana. So the Be'er Lacha says, he makes this cheshbon here, that pulling a tooth on Shabbos depends on our machlokas from tonight. According to Rabbi Shimon, it's asr midiraisa, because just like he waives the need for tikkun, he waives the need for kavana, he doesn't really care. But according to Rabbi Yehuda, it's going to be asr midirabana. And so therefore, the Be'er Lacha paskins that there's room to be mekel, you don't need to be sick all over. A person's whole body does not need to be ill. As long as a person has a toothache, that's sufficient to permit pulling the tooth on Shabbos with a goy, unlike the Magen Avraham. So that's all our second application tonight of tonight's discussion. We have this machlokas haposkim as to what's the halacha in terms of pulling the tooth on Shabbos. Is it deraisa? Is it derabanan? And the nafka mina is when would we allow a goy to do such a thing? So let's just sum up. I apologize for the time. Let's just sum up and then we'll finish for tonight. So just to quickly sum up, we have two parts to tonight's share. In part one, we were discussing, once again, does the malacha, the need for productivity apply to chabura and tahavara? Rabbi Shimon says that it does not. You're chayv, even if it's a kilkul. Rabbi Yehuda says that it does. It needs to be a tikkun. Derivationally, it came to how do you understand bris milah and bas kohen? Are those productive? Are they destructive? We give a hesber as to when you do it for the sake of a mitzvah, is that called a tikkun or not? On the one hand, it's beneficial, but you're not creating something. So that was part one. And then in part two, we had two shilas in the poskim that were connected to tonight's discussion. Shiloh one was putting in an IV on Shabbos for chol she'embo sakana. What's the halacha? We had machlokas poskim shmir Shabbos and Rabramsky or machmir. Only for chol she'yeshbo sakana would it be permissible, but for embo sakana it would be prohibited because you're doing chavalah, you're drawing out the blood. Whereas the Or Lezion had argued that the two mitigating factors, it's enes rich lagufa and it's a kilkul, because you're not really using the blood, you're discarding the blood, and a Ravadi Tzitzilias were moja to that halacha. And our second application was the issue of pulling a tooth on Shabbos. The Ramah said, you can have a goy pull a tooth. How far does the heter of the Ramah go? So Magen Avraham says that since pulling a tooth is aser midaraisa for chabura, it's only the mutter if the cholah's whole body is in pain. Whereas the Be'er Lacha says that yes, according to Rabbi Shimon, it would be aser deraisa, but according to Rabbi Yehuda, it's only asr midirabanan, and therefore it could be permissible even if the whole body is not in pain. Just to point out one last interesting shayla that comes up in the poskim, the Sitzeliezer points out that our first application tonight about putting in an IV on Shabbos also is relevant to another contemporary shayla that comes up in the poskim, which is how to feed a chola sheyesh bo sakana on Yom Kippur. On Yom Kippur, so the post can discuss, what is the best way, if someone's life is on the line, to allow for the person to eat? Should he eat orally through his mouth, or should we feed him through an IV? So that's another shayla that comes up in the poskim. How should we deal with a chol sheyesh bo sakana on Yom Kippur? Is it better to eat orally, or is it better to eat with an IV? So the Tzitz Eliezer points out that it's very much connected to tonight's discussion, because Yom Kippur is like Shabbos. So if putting an IV on Shabbos is aser midaraisa, then putting an IV on Yom Kippur is aser midaraisa. If putting an IV on Shabbos is aser derabanan, so then on Yom Kippur is aser derabanan. So tonight's discussion is very much connected to that shayla in the poskim of what's the best way to deal with the chol sheyesh bo sakana on Yom Kippur. Depending on if an IV is aser derabanan or derabanan, it's going to play a significant role in analyzing that shayla. With that, we've concluded the principle of mekakel and mitzvah after. The break, we're going to move on to Shinoi. Shkaya.
Wonderful break.
Shkaya.
A wonderful Shabbos.
Thank you.